This is ILTA Radio, the source for legal technology practices and ideas to help your career delivered to fit your busy schedule. ILTA Radio, get tuned in.
Hello, everyone. Today, we're going to talk about physical security. We always think of physical security as something other than what we do in the cybersecurity arena. For instance, most organizations and myself tend to focus more on the technical aspects of security countermeasures, you know, but we all know that all the network intrusion detection systems, firewalls are useless if some intruder or even an employee that shouldn't have access to certain areas can steal your equipment or data. So today we're going to be talking about this, and our guest today is Heath Stanley from Garland Hart. Welcome, Keith.
Hello, Mr. David. That's right. I get called Keith all the time.
So, Heath, why don't you give us a quick introduction of yourself and what you do?
Sure. So I'm with Garland Hart Information Security. We also do partner work with Traveling Coaches. That's a little bit better known in the legal space. But we assess information security in the legal space. We've also done lots of work for banks, but we like the term information security as opposed to cybersecurity because it seems more holistic and all-encompassing like physical security like we're talking about here today.
Agreed.
I personally have been here for 10 years. I've done assessments all the way from, you know, one- and two-person shops up to global organizations with thousands of employees, so I've seen a little bit of everything. And hopefully we'll hit on something that you know our user base wants to listen to today.
Fantastic. So without further ado, let's jump right in, Heath.
Yeah.
So we all know that physical security is typically overlooked. I know I have in the past, or a second thought when it comes to information security. I got that buzzword, words. So Heath, do you believe physical security is an afterthought in most organizations, and why do you think that is? And then the second part of that question, because of that, do you think there's too much emphasis on aesthetics and functionality rather than safety and security?
Yeah, unfortunately, physical security is sometimes an afterthought, but it really shouldn't be. Technology has come so far that you can still make really clean and nice and modern looking spaces without, you know, cumbersome information security. For example, you know, you can have tiny cameras hidden even in a door jam. Let's say, you know, you have a black door jam, so you can capture faces as you know, people are coming and going.
Right.
Some of the you know, banks are really good at this. If you walk up to a teller line these days, which I don't know why anyone would go into a bank, but they do, there's cameras in FDIC logos that are just about eye level for anyone that walks in. So
did technology. Did you just give away a secret?
I hope not. Bad guys already know about those. What I'm trying to get across is you can do both. You can make a really nice looking space and it can be secure.
Yeah, I agree with that. So we know that physical security is to safeguard multiple things, information systems, equipment, IT infrastructure, facilities, and personnel. So based on that, what is the most important in the list I described, and what is the approach looking at these very important objectives from a very high-level perspective?
So when we're doing assessments, we always think about the safety of people first, you know, our staff, clients, anyone that's coming and going from the space. So while, yes, protecting your server room is important and should probably have the strongest layer of access control to get to it, the overall safety of all of our folks is first, and then everything else is a very distant, you know, third, fourth, and fifth.
Got you. So when you say personnel, you're talking about the safety based on the needs of, a person, water, electricity, climate control, those kind of things?
Absolutely. And then even to take it a step further is just the, you know, bodily harm safety of you know, reception staff and just anyone in the facility. So we don't see it enough where in a firm space, you know, you have reception staff and they're seeing, you know, 24, 36 people a day. We don't know all these folks, so we need to give them the capabilities to, you know, alert everyone in the firm or at least a couple of people, say, hey, we've got some strange looking characters up here, or, you know, somebody's getting a little rowdy or wanting into some firm space. We need to give those reception staff an ability to alert other people within the firm or tenant security staff or even law enforcement. And at least if it doesn't stop anything, it can at least alert others to take cover or hide or fight back or whatever needs to be done.
Sure. Do y'all recommend or even point organizations for training for receptionists or first in line to meet or greet people on a day-to-day basis, what they should do, for instance, if they have an agitated person come in and try to give them a bad time? Do you have or do you recommend on those people either planning what they need to do or recommend them going to training to understand what needs to be done in it and kind of even understand the human psyche to some degree about those kind of people?
Absolutely. There are some good training tools out there. We can probably add those to the post on this podcast, David. I could send you some of those.
Sure.
But just to discuss it some more, my favorite is just to kind of give them a very brief checklist is, you know, make introductions, try to understand the situation. And then from there, it's always alerting.
Gotcha.
And I like alerts that, go to kind of all the parties involved that we talked about earlier. First to like an office manager or an immediate security guard that may potentially be there. But then also throughout the whole, you know, building or floor or firm space, which can be done in a multitude of ways without being too cumbersome. But, you know, if you have a violent intruder, you want to let everyone know about that right now, right?
Absolutely.
So we talked about safety first for everyone. A discreet way of doing that or a non-discreet way are both good. But there's some cool tools now that reception can use, you know, as far as an alert button underneath the desk that can send a text to the, you know, appropriate folks, and they can decide to send that text to out the rest of the firm.
Or, yeah, I think there's even some cloud-based solutions for those kind of things.
Absolutely. And then there's other ones that will start, you know, sending email alerts and text alerts, but then even flashing lights in, you know, an IT room or an office manager space, so they say, okay, hey, this is an event. I've got to go take care of this right now. It's not one of those alerts that is, you know, like the millions of IDS and IPS alerts like you and I get, David. It's the ones that are, okay, let's do this right now.
Sure. Well, that's good information. So we know we need a holistic approach and understanding of physical security, and you kind of touched on this a little bit. Do you believe that there may be a little lack of knowledge pertaining to physical security and the multifaceted approach of variables or components needed to secure an organization? Do you think that we need to probably train more people and let them understand kind of these approaches in physical security?
Sure. So social engineering, you know, just like from what we hear about on the technology side more and more often now, is one of the biggest, I guess, exposures that we could have from a physical security side. So you can have all the access controls in the world, you know, three layers to get to an IT room door with surveillance all over the place and, you know, intrusion detection alerts for if there's vibration or sound and everything. But if you can talk the sweet little receptionist into letting a bad guy in, then, then you know, we've spent all these dollars and they're out the window. Similar, you know, to a phishing attempt. You know, we could put all the perimeter tools in place as far as spam blocking and phishing alerting tools and training. But if a user still clicks that link, then you know we've got a virus or crypto wall or whatever the latest and greatest is.
Sure. So training, and more training.
Yeah, specifically for social engineering, David, we've shared some of these, you know, interesting tales before, but when part of our engagements sometimes do involve social engineering and making sure our staff know what to do. So probably our most common scenario that we use is, hello, I'm Heath. The tenant management company here has sent me up to check physical security for this building. I'm just going to be walking around for a few minutes. Don't mind me. And we see how, you know, reception staff respond.
Right.
Sometimes they're like, no. Let me verify that. Let's see what's going on. Unfortunately, sometimes it's, oh yeah, go ahead. Let me know when you're leaving, or can I get you a water or a Coke, or let me know what you need.
Trying to be that friendly person.
Yeah, exactly. And you know, they do get trained more on, you know, how to be very welcoming and hospitable than, you know, physical security. But it still needs to be the front of their mind.
Absolutely. I wouldn't agree more. Okay, so we talked about the people aspect at a very high level. So we're going to start looking at the other little tidbits within a physical security consideration, or let's say an audit, you know, if you were performing an audit. So one of the things that I thought was interesting that I would have never thought is environmental. So I typically didn't see environmental as a security risk when you're talking about protecting the organization's assets, other than I need air conditioning in my data center because all my components need to be cool. So give me your opinion on the environmental equation of physical security, and where do you see it on the importance scale?
Sure. So the, you know, environmental elements can be leveraged really, really well to meet what we talked about at the very beginning, you know, aesthetically pleasing environments, but then also secure environments.
Mm-hmm.
So a good example here is just, you know, like stanchions in front of a building or trees. So if you have a tree lined or a bush lined facility and you want, you know, most of our visitors or users to come out of one or two entrances, you can really align those to where users can only, you know, they can tell that these are the only two or three entrances that we can go to, and you lock the doors on the rest or create access controls on the rest.
Right.
And we've seen that done really well. The cleverest that I think I've seen so far has been, you know, I've got a grocery store, and they have stanchions in front of their building, you know, because they don't want bad guys just running a car into the facility. And
it's like a smash and grab, huh?
Yeah, exactly. Their stanchions, you know, look like bell peppers and apples and pineapples and avocados. So, you know, everybody else thinks it's decorations, and a geek like me walks up and is like, oh, those are stanchions. So yeah, you can do neat stuff like that. The opposite side is true too. You know, if we're not keeping up with the outside facility, you know, like overgrown trees, or, you know, in the spring and summertime, they're really full trees, you lose some of the surveillance that you may have, especially multi-floor facilities, when you're used to looking out, or, you know, if you have balconies, that makes it easier for bad guys to get to second and third floors. And sometimes those are the doors and windows you forget to lock too, right?
Yeah, right. Well, that's interesting. I'm going to kind of drill down a little bit more environmental. So
sure.
We have some things, like you said, stanchions or tree lines and so forth. So let's go over some other environmental controls, lighting. So lighting is always a big deal. And even I've even heard of lawsuits being brought because there's poor lighting and somebody gets accosted. Are those concerns in any kind of physical security design, even in multi-tenant space?
Sure, absolutely. So we, you know, I like to think of lighting similar to surveillance. Any entry and exit points need to be well surveilled and well lighted. Okay. Those seem to be the spaces that we can control the best, right? So we want to see who's coming into the facility, and then you can't always verify that without proper lighting.
Sure.
But yeah, I always like to put lighting kind of at the top of the list when we're doing assessments in the evening.
Good. So what about physical controls? What are some of the aspects of physical controls when you're talking about site design and layout, for instance?
So we like to require or suggest actual access controls on any entry into firm-owned space or private space. So not necessarily into all reception areas or exits, you know, to a elevator or stairwell, but anywhere where, you know, we have offices that's not public meeting space, or we have, you know, technology components that we want to protect, we want to see access control on every one of those entrances. So too often we see, oh, hey, there's a keypad I got to walk through on this backside, but if I walk all the way around through these hallways through the public space, then I can get to this area without a badge reader. I just got to take, you know, 100 extra steps.
Yeah.
So unfortunately, we do see that too often. Yeah.
Yeah. So you would say, like, if I'm coming off an elevator bank, you would want to see access controls on each side of the ingress of that office space, that tenant space.
Absolutely. Or a reception, and then reception would have to let someone into the private space or meeting space. You know, a good way to think about it, if this area needs access control, is if we have any firm data in there, or access to firm data, then
sure.
Yes, it needs an access control. And then, you know, David, you and I have talked quite a bit about all the great tools that are in place for access control now. Biometric has come a really long way. We've seen some really good biometric implementations. So you don't have to put up with, oh, I lost my key card, I can't get in, can you buzz me in? Well, you can't forget your finger. So
right.
And there's some really clean implementations. It used to be, you know, the error rate was really too high to suggest usage of those devices. But, you know, if Apple can put it on every device that they make now, then I think we've come far enough.
Sure. I've even seen new applications that are using Bluetooth access.
Absolutely.
With a multi-factor authentication where you have an application loaded on your mobile phone, it gets into proximity of the control, and then you're required to either enter a PIN or your fingerprint or something like that.
Absolutely. Yeah, if we can get to multi-factor into our more sensitive layers, that would be excellent.
I think so too.
We require multi-factor for remote access into our network sometimes. I'm not sure why it shouldn't be the same case when we're talking about physical security as well, especially the really sensitive areas.
100% agreement there. So let's talk a little bit about the data center. I know that when we talk about physical security, at least from my perspective over my career, I really focus everything on this little secure data center thing. So let's talk a little bit about fire protection and a secure data center. And I'd like you to kind of give me your thoughts on on-prem and managed data center, because I found out that sometimes you can dictate a little bit of what a managed center, you can ask for a managed center in relation to your equipment.
So we are big fans of off-prem too. Just the overhead of putting in all the physical security and environmental controls that you need or we want to see in a data center can be more effectively and probably, you know, cheaper to do by a data center that's already paid to have the infrastructure in than us putting it all in ourselves.
Right.
Especially if you're moving a big infrastructure, you know, a couple of racks or, you know, three or four racks. At that point, you're going to be paying enough anyway, so you better get exactly what you want out of the data center. And they're getting better at already having, you know, fire suppression in place, or working with you to put exactly what you want in place. For example, we've seen examples of one firm that was moving from one rack to two, and the data center is like, well, we're going to put one rack here, and we're going to put another rack, 40 feet away, four rows over, you'll have the same controls, and they're like, no, we're paying you all enough money now, let's get into a cage,
right?
And they are able to do that, and then they have even more physical or control the physical security of their center there with all the great protections of a tier four data center, with FM220 gas or Halon gas, whatever, OSHA will let us use now.
Right.
The oxygen suppression system, so we can really protect our data and systems, and are still giving enough time to get people out of the room too.
Yeah, I remember I had an audit done on my managed data center, and I won't name the data center, but I remember we had the cage separation. And one of the things I never thought of was the uplink cable, the fiber cable between the cages, was prominent across public access raceways. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And I actually got dinged on it, and I would have thought of that.
Yeah, we run into that enough, and at some point you just have to be willing to accept some risks, right? Because that is one of the risks here in the data center. But if they have secure cabling in place, and it's organized, and you can kind of follow to where it's yours, then in many cases, I hate to use the term good enough, but it is the probability of crosstalk is so slim to none these days, but then also putting an interceptor device between your servers and your switches are just kind of slim to none. Because of all the, you would just notice that these days.
Right. So let's talk about a little bit about unwanted visitors and physical controls again. And one of the things I thought intriguing in talking to you was intrusion detection systems for the physical side. We all know about IDS, IPS on the electronic side. What are some of the intrusion detection systems you're familiar with as it relates to physical security?
So we mostly see them in data centers, and they're on mainframes or core routers. But they can range from anything from, keeping the temperature to between, 65 and 75, whatever you want it, all the way up to sound detection, vibration detection alerts. So
really?
If you've got somebody that is walking into the facility whistling, you're going to get an alert from hearing their whistles, but you'll also get an alert from the vibration of their footsteps.
Is that becoming more prevalent?
It's... No. In data centers it is, because they want to know when certain high-risk, high-value assets are getting close to them. But within environments, we really only see them on major mainframes like a iSeries or an AIX box.
Oh, okay. Gotcha.
Yeah.
I see.
There's... We actually see them more on a $50,000 tapestry or a $100,000 Rembrandt. Sorry, not an artiste fan, but I can name some of them. But we do see those more on those sort of high value assets than we do on our technology assets.
Oh, okay, gotcha. I understand. Okay, so we've talked about intrusion detection, data center security, physical controls. One of the things that I want to talk to you about real briefly is physical security as it relates to national disasters, mainly from, the natural disaster, but the business continuity and DR equation of those natural disasters. And what are those important aspects that you consider in physical security related to that, related to those few things?
Yeah, unfortunately, that is part of it. And we've seen a little bit of it all. And David, I know you've had to put up with some of it too, you know, with flooding. So those really are case by case basis. But so one is the proactive approach, whereas if you know you're going to have an event like a flooding or hurricane, then you can try to secure your assets the best you can. Get them up on higher floors. You can move them. you can secure them within the facility better, take them from external walls to internal walls. So I, you know, people ask me, hey, should we do that? And I, absolutely. Because it's better to know where it's at than not. Because the second part is the reactive approach after, or approach after you have an event, and trying to find your documents that have strewn away after a tornado. That's no fun. So really our events, our suggestions there aren't trying to go out there and walk the streets and try to pick up your documents again. It's more along the lines of protecting what you still do have. So posting security guards, posting staff that can try to protect what's still there or collect what's still there and move it. What we mostly want to have people concerned about is securing what is still within our space.
Okay. So that would be paper, electronics.
Sorry. I guess I should have touched on that too. But yeah, at that point, it mostly is paper, especially you know, stocks and intellectual property and deeds and such.
Sure. And that's tough to protect. If you're on a 30th floor multi-tenant building that, you know, and a tornado blows through, that can be really challenging.
Yeah, and we've, you know, unfortunately had to see some of that. And that's why, you know, trying to get those on those interior spaces is one of the first things I like to suggest.
Yeah. So let's talk a little bit about business continuity and disaster recovery. Considerations within the physical security realm or audit. So what I don't want to get too detailed because I know business continuity plans and disaster recovery plans can get real extensive, and that's all kind of based on your organization and what you need for RTO, RPO. But real, you know, at a high level, Heath, what would be some of the considerations that would be needed in a BCP, your business continuity plan or disaster recovery plan?
So what we try to do is have alternate space identified. So if you do have to proactively evacuate, then you can go to Austin if you're housed in Houston. We're going to take a proactive approach. We're going to take some, you know, what's most important and get it up there. Or if you want to stay locally in the region, just identify other commercially available space that we know we can go, we can access. You know, it's within a couple of miles of our current space, or even better, you know, a dozen or so miles away. So we wouldn't be affected by a larger disaster, or at least a regional event. We could still escape and get to somewhere else.
Sure.
So those are the two from actual alternate space. But we also try to identify who our local law enforcement is, so we can either engage them to watch our space while we've got exposures, you know, like a whole wall missing, or a security guard sort of firm that can post someone there and keep bad guys away while we are exposed.
Oh, yeah. Those are good suggestions. Some of the things that I know we've done is we pick secondary data center sites, you know, or even if you can't, if you're not an organization large enough to have two data centers, you can actually have another office serve as a data center, couldn't you?
That's actually what we see more often still is, you know, have a primary data center, you know, let's say in Houston, and then their secondary site in Dallas, and they're either running active-active or, you know, we just have alternate servers and hardware in Dallas that we can spin up in a cold environment and try to get them running within a week.
Yeah. Well, I guess everybody knows now where we're interviewing from. Texas.
Yes. Yes. Sorry, everybody else.
I always like to say,
by, that by our accents anyway.
I think so. A couple of rednecks talking about security. So, you know, usually they think that Houston, we probably carry a bunch of six guns around on holsters.
Okay. Hey, that's why it's free, folks.
So let's kind of wrap this up a little. So basically, I think what I've taken from this is, I think, number one, if you're moving your office space, whether it be multi-tenant or your own building, that IT should have some input, don't you think, into the design of the space, the remodeling or whatever?
Yeah, totally. Get your technology folks input, but get the, you know, the office manager's input too, you know, from a reception standpoint. Get your, you know, your bookkeeping and HR staff involved, because they may want a more secure space as well.
Right.
You know, get involved with your engineers and architects from the very beginning and let them know where we want access controls in place so they can build it accordingly.
That's good. That's good advice. So remember, everyone, number one and foremost, protect your people. That is the most important asset, I think anybody would agree, in any organization, because without people, you don't have an organization. And to be able to accomplish the basic facility needs for those people, such as food, water, electricity, and climate controls, and it always employee safety, and I think Heath reiterated this, should always be the priority. And after that, then you secure the facility. So I want to thank Heath for joining us and giving us a lot of good advice and expertise in this area. I know there's some things I've learned, and we really appreciate all the information, Heath.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me, Mr. David. Let's do it again.
All right. All right, we will. Take care.
You've been listening to ILTA Radio. Subscribe to ILTA's podcasts through iTunes or Podbean and get alerted about new recordings. ILTA Radio. Get tuned in.